Hello and welcome everybody to a brand new episode of the Evil Safety Dudes. I am your host, Mr. Aaron Isino. I am the Director of Risk Management for IBC. And this is our podcast where we get to talk about anything and everything that has to do with occupational health, safety, and security. If it's a threat to an employee on the job, anywhere in the world, any type of threat, any type of hazard, we get to talk about it on this show. No hazard, no injury, no near miss is too small or too big. We're talking from fatalities to paper cuts, whatever it is, we're talking about it on this show. And this is episode 161. As always, everybody, please go out and write a review where you can. I think the best place to do it is probably on the Apple podcast. But write a review and share this and like it and rate it and let everybody know that has a job to listen to this so they could go to work and make that money and not die or get injured. That's important to everybody on the job. It's actually important to everybody, even people who don't work. Why? Because even if you don't work, you have people in your life who do work and you want them to come home safe. So share this podcast with everyone, even small children. No, I'm just kidding. But in all seriousness, it does affect children because we're talking about their parents are at work, and definitely those kids need their parents and want their parents to come home safe. So what are we talking about today? Well, OSHA was in town last week. Dun, dun, dun. Oh, yeah, man. My phone was going off the hook. I mean, phones aren't on the hook anymore, but my cell phone was vibrating a lot in my pocket. And I was out of town, too. I was I was out of state, actually. I was doing training in another state. And of all the days to be out of town, here comes OSHA in my town in Sioux City. They hit up small, medium-sized construction project. And I had a couple clients out there. And so I was getting the calls. Oh, she's here. What do we do? Well, normally, in a normal situation, I'd run over there. You know, even if I had a class, you know, coming up, I would postpone it because, you know, this is a fire. This is a big deal. You know, OSHA coming on site in Iowa. This was in Iowa, Sioux City, Iowa. It's still a big deal, even though Iowa's a state-run plan, and our Iowa compliance officers and area directors are pretty chill, pretty good, very workable and user-friendly and level-headed. And even though they can cite for serious and other than serious violations, even though they can cite right now $15,625, they don't. You know, they're hitting folks for first-time offenses, in my experience, around $3,500. You know, and most of the time on a good day, I can get the citations half off, maybe even 60% off. But still, you know, they find seven things. You know, you're looking at thousands of dollars. So, plus it goes on your record. It's just not a good experience. Plus, like, everybody still is doing the old school thing and fleeing the job sites. That makes OSHA just come back more. So, it really delays projects as well. So, all your timelines and schedules and all of that stuff. So, I mean, it is a big deal. And I couldn't run over there and be Johnny on the spot because I was out of state. So, you know, I just want to talk folks through this. And we've done a show before. I don't remember what number it was, but it was on, you know, how to survive an OSHA inspection. But I want to go over this one because it was very detailed. First of all, this was a random inspection. And that means something. It wasn't an employee complaint or referral, you know. No employee ratted anybody out. No safety person got mad and referred this job site to OSHA to be looked at. It wasn't that. It wasn't a imminent danger case. You know, no one alerted OSHA that, whoa, people are about to die. They're doing super dangerous stuff on the site. And it wasn't an investigation for a hospitalization, amputation, or fatality. So it was straight up just, hey, this job site got pulled out of a hat. It's random. So they have to do so many randoms a year. So I like randoms. If I had to choose a reason for OSHA to be on a site, I would definitely choose random. because they're not there for any, you know, reason other than just to fulfill a quota, basically. So they're not like, oh man, someone got killed on the site. We got to go cite them. We got to go get them. We got to go make them pay. Wow, three employees got hospitalized. Man, this site's not doing well for safety. We got to go, you know, get them. There's none of that going on. It's just like, hi, I'm with OSHA. I'm here to do a random inspection. And, you know, they come from Des Moines. So that's 3 hours to Sioux City. So they're always getting here around, you know, lunchtime, around 11. And they want to get off at 5. So they don't want to stay there forever, you know. They got a 3-hour drive back, you know, it's about 210 miles. So, and they're usually chill and, you know, they're just checking boxes. They're just doing their job too. So that's what happened in town last week. And, so I want to go over the list that the OSHA compliance officers were handing out to the contractors there. So you could be ready. So when it happens to you, it's not a freak out moment. It's just like, oh, I'm ready. Got all my ducks in a row. Got all my stuff ready. That's the best way to handle OSHA. You know, every time they ask you for something, you're like, wha-bam, here you go. And like, oh, yeah, well, we need this too. And like, wha-bam, there you go. And like, oh, well, we need this too. And like, wha-bam, you know, policies, training records, whatever. And, you know, you're just giving it to them easy. They know you're not making it fast or, you know, buying one off the internet quick. And it just, you know, shows them, hey, we're on the level, you know, go look at somebody else. Don't, we're on the level here. We're compliant with you. We're a safe company. But when OSHA comes and they ask for stuff and people don't have it, that's when people freak out. That's when there's citations, stuff like that. So here's the list that they gave the contractors. Number one thing on the list they asked for was OSHA 300 and 300A logs. And they would give them 4 hours to produce it. Now, I mean, my clients have these because, you know, they have me to help them. And I really try to train in-house people. I have a joke. It's a terrible game, really. It's called, let's play a game. Aaron's dead. You know, like I want everybody to be able to stand alone on safety. You know, I don't want to be the guy that the only guy who knows how to do this stuff. So one of my main things as a safety consultant in my current role working for an insurance agency is I want to strengthen all my clients on safety on their own. Cause I literally could die tomorrow. I mean, everybody could die tomorrow, but especially me, cause I'm a crazy dude. I mean, you know, I'm still fighting and I'm still climbing rocks and rock climbing and, you know, whatever. So I drive all the time. It's the most dangerous thing anybody ever does. So I could literally die tomorrow. So I said, you know, if I was dead tomorrow, how, you know, how would you make this log? You know, let me train you how to build this log. So they asked for the 300 and the 300A logs. And then they asked for any 301 forms or any first report injuries or any incident reports. OSHA has this form called a 301, which is basically their incident report. And I have a lot of clients who use that because their thought process is, hey, if OSHA made this report, we know OSHA approves this report. We're just going to use it. I got other clients that are fancy. They're like, ew, that form's ugly looking. Plus, all our forms have to be numbered and labeled and be in our system. So they make what's called an equivalent form, which is they make sure that they ask all the questions that the 301 form asks. That way it's compliant with OSHA. They could ask 5, 10, 15, 20, 300 more questions, but you got to ask all the same questions that OSHA asks. And then they could make their own pretty forms, but they asked for that. Here was something that they were super after on this site. Health and safety programs. They wanted their hazardous communication program, which is your chemical safety program. They wanted lockout, tagout program and training records. They wanted the personal protective equipment program. And they wanted the ladder safety program and training records. That's what they were really, really after on this site. But their list, though, is larger than that. They also frequently ask for emergency action plans, facility diagrams, safety data sheet program, the machine-specific lockout-tagout procedures, the respirator program and fit test records, confined space program, forklift trading program, employee list, and any internal investigations. And that's kind of their standard stuff in Iowa that they're looking for. And depending on the site, they'll draw from that list exactly what they want. So on this particular site, being a construction site, they weren't really after the lockout tagout stuff and, you know, and a lot of that other stuff, because they kind of geared it towards construction. They'll also gear it towards the contractor. You know, if they're looking at an HVAC guy doing an install or a plumbing guy doing an install, they might not ask for lockout tagout stuff, because, you know, that stuff usually, I mean, HVAC can involve electricity, but on the construction phase when you're installing it, no, you know, it's literally just installing ducts. They'd be more concerned with like fall protection and things like that. So they also kind of customize what they ask from this list depending on the trade of the contractor that they're looking at that time. So yeah, OSHA was in time. They asked for this list. What was awesome was my two clients were on it. They had all the stuff. So they were able to email it to the OSHA guy in time. Boom, no citations. Now, I can't say that for all the other contractors on site. You know, those who didn't have the OSHA logs, didn't have any of these programs, and for sure didn't have training records. I find, you know, even companies who aren't up on safety have programs. You know, they bought some off the internet 10 years ago. You know, they could pull a policy from somewhere. They've never read it before, and it's not customized or fine-tuned or detailed to their company needs, but they have one. In my experience, most companies have safety policies. So, you know, they could furnish those. But the training records, oh, man, in the OSHA logs, that would get a lot of folks, a lot of contractors, you know, especially if you're a small or medium contractor. You know, you don't know what you don't know, you know. I was doing a class one time for some HVAC folks. These are HVAC experts, man. Doing HVAC for 40 years, right? And I'm sitting there teaching on something, whatever, some kind of safety topic. And I hear them all listening to my air conditioning instead of me. And I'm like, hey, guys, you know, what's going on? They're like, you hear that? That part's about to go out on your unit. You know, and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. But they had that level of skill and wisdom when it come to HVAC systems. They could listen to it run and know what part's about to go out. They could hear a vibration that's not supposed to be there and know what that vibration's coming from and suggest me to hire them or someone else to fix before something goes out preemptively. And that's skill. That's wisdom. You know, that's experience. Well, the safety is the same way. You know, safety experts could look at a company, look at the trade, know what type of injuries are very, very likely to happen in that trade, know what OSHA is going to require from that trade. And you know, it's easy for us because that's what we do. But when you're a small to medium-sized company, you don't have anybody with that safety skill. You don't know what you don't know. You have no idea you need OSHA logs, you know. One of the big misconceptions that I hear from small contractors, you know, under 10 employees, I hear this all the time. And they're pretty pissed at me when I tell them their belief system is inaccurate. They say, well, we're not under OSHA because we're under 10 people. You know, if I had $5 for every time, you know, I heard that, I could fill up my vehicle. I couldn't retire, but I could fill up my vehicle a few times. But that's the misconception. You know, they're thinking, man, I'm under 10. I'm not under OSHA. No, no, no. There's like one rule you're not under. You're still under all the ones that pertain to your trade. You're not required to keep logs, OSHA logs, if you're under 10, you know? But that doesn't mean you don't have to follow the personal protective equipment rules, the fall protection rules, the lockout tagout rules, the, you know, but that is a real belief out there. Well, I'm under 10, I'm good. And then I hear all the time too, owners, well, I'm not under OSHA. Because I'm an owner. I was like, man, you're thinking about like work comp and insurance and stuff like that. You're not thinking about OSHA regs, you know? If OSHA, well, I'm not an employee. They cleared that up a long time ago. There was a little loophole a long time ago with the definition of employee. But if you're on the job working and you're an owner and they catch you breaking an OSHA rule, they're getting you. They don't care if you're the owner, the CEO, the new guy. They don't care what you are. So that's changed. So those are some big misconceptions. But the other thing I want to talk about was just the preparation for OSHA, just to remind everybody. I could put you through the course, or you could find these courses online, or you may have a safety service you use, like the National Safety Council or some other, you know, other place you go for safety training and consulting. But most of them will have a course on something like this. It'll be similar titled, How to Survive an OSHA Inspection. And I definitely have that one. I title mine different. You know, that's like a generic course, you know, but I have a very specific one where I train people how to be an OSHA liaison. Don't ask me how to spell liaison. That word just eludes me. Spelling is not one of my strong suits, but I know how to say it. Liaison. But anyway, I think every company, especially contractor, needs to have a couple trained OSHA liaisons. Some say, well, that's what we got you for. Well, I was out of state and I couldn't be the liaison. And although these clients did well because they were prepared and compliant, they would do a lot better and wouldn't even have to call me if they had liaisons. So what do we cover in that liaison training? Well, just basically how to run this inspection, how to run that opening conference with OSHA, you know, not letting them just hit the field and do their inspection, but pulling them inside, checking their credentials, making sure they're legit, and then asking them, why are you here? Finding out that it's a random, so now you know I can take them on the unscenic route, you know, that they're not there to get anybody. They're just checking boxes and fulfilling quotas. And then how to run the actual inspection, you know. If they take a picture, you take a picture too from the same angle. You know, there's all these little tricks that they've done over the years. I also like to tell people, like, if, you know, they see something and you know they're looking at a violation, like, correct it right away. It may not get you out of it, but it also may. For instance, if you're walking around with the OSHA person and you see one of your employees standing on the cap of an A-frame ladder, come on, guy. Shouldn't do any elevated work when OSHA's on site. But let's say your employee was, and the OSHA guy's like, huh? And he starts to bust out his phone, take a picture. And you're like, hey, Pete, get down now. And no more ladder use for you until you retrain. Report to my office tomorrow at 8 a.m. for retraining. Go to inventory. man, that may not get you out of the citation, but it may. It's 50-50. And it's worth it. Because one, that's what you're supposed to do anyway. You know, you're supposed to retrain an employee when you find them lacking the skills to do that job safely. If it's running a power tool, wearing a harness, running a forklift, or using a ladder, when you find them insufficient knowledge, doing something wrong and unsafe, you have to retrain them anyway. So anyway, that 50-50 chance, that could cause the OSHA guy to go, okay, you handle it. You know, I'm chill. I'm cool. I'm not going to write that up. Or they could say, no, I saw it. You know, sorry. I couldn't get a picture in time because you yelled at him to get down, but I saw it, so I don't need a picture, you know. So I always like people to do that, try to correct stuff immediately, you know, as they see it. I wouldn't necessarily advise, you know, correcting it if the person didn't see it. You know, once the walkthrough's done, you can go correct it later. You don't want to draw their attention to stuff. But, you know, there's little tricks, you know, when you're doing the walkthrough. We cover all that in the course. And then how to run the closing conference, where you take them back into, you know, the job trailer or the office, or you're standing by the tailgate if it's a construction site, and you're just like, all right, let's do our closing conference. And I always advise my liaisons to be pretty frank and blunt, although super nice and professional, but say stuff like, all right, sir, what do you think you're going to hit us on? You know, just get a heads up. Just get a heads up. But it's the whole course just how to run this. What to say, what not to say, what to do, what not to do, you know. So I suggest every contractor in every plant have a couple OSHA liaisons. And you may want a couple on each shift. Just somebody there competent and trained to handle that OSHA inspection, you know to do the opening conference, the inspection, and the closing conference, and just to know all the tricks of the trade. It could really, really go a long way to lessening your OSHA citations. I won't say it'll eliminate them, because if OSHA catches you breaking a law, they catch you breaking a law. But I know for a fact through experience, it can significantly reduce it. I've had people with no training want to be the liaison and cause more citations because they're just running their mouth, the things that they're saying. They don't know they're saying, they don't know they're admitting that they're doing OSHA violations because they don't know. They don't know the regs. You know, they'd say stuff like, oh yeah, that idiot Pete, we just caught him on that ladder. Yeah, maybe we should start ladder training program. Well, you just admitted you didn't have one and you never trained him, you know. You thought that was the right thing to say. You know what? I think we should start doing ladder training. Well, you just admitted you don't do ladder training. So, you know, it liaison, you know, it's a little touchy. You gotta really think before you speak. And you gotta be able to control your temper. I know a lot of guys, I would never, ever, 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 ever want them to be their company's OSHA liaison because they're too hot-headed and they hate OSHA. They'll make it 10 times worse. They'll actually bark at OSHA. Be like, what are you doing here? Why don't you go do something, bust some real dangerous people? Let us do our job. This is America. We have freedom. You know, why are you messing with me running my company? You know, this is government overreach. You know, I don't care your political views and how you feel about OSHA. It's not the time and place to be sharing those thoughts with the compliant officer who's there to find fines. It's not good to rile them up. You know, you could have those personal beliefs. That's your right to believe whatever you want, but that's not the time and place to go on your soapbox, okay? Start a blog, do a Facebook post, you know? But right then and there with the compliance officer, riling them all up, you know, disrespecting them and dissing them, not a good idea. And there's people have done it. Believe me, I've seen it. You know, I have seen it. People not knowing how it works, not knowing OSHA's jurisdiction, not knowing their authority, not knowing their power. I've seen superintendents run them off site, man. Get the F off my site. Get out of here. Piece of bleep, bleep, bleep. Get off my site. You ain't coming on my site till you get a warrant. They don't need no warrant. Man, that guy's all pissed now, that OSHA compliance officer. I've seen it happen. I seen him just go to his car, didn't leave. I'm like, this is not good. And then I see him come back out of his car, get off his phone, and go up superintendent and be like, you want a warrant? Check your inbox. You know, he's got a magistrate on speed dial. He's used to working with hot-headed, ignorant superintendents. And now that compliance officer is pissed, and now he's going to do an inspection? Well, that was the dumbest thing you could have done, you know? So anyway, there is definitely a skill and an act for being an OSHA liaison. You got to choose someone with the right temperament, someone who could really think before they speak, someone who could really just not speak too, you know, kind of like not speak unless spoken to, you know, and someone that could be professional and run the three phases of the inspection. And also it would be good, it's not totally required, but if it was someone that had access to some of these documents that they could send them, because the quicker you send them, you know, just the more you're proven to OSHA, you're on the level, you know. When they ask for a program, you're like, boom, it's in your inbox. When they ask for training records, you're like, boom, it's in your inbox. But that person should also not only have access to that, but know what they're sending, you know how to look it over before they send it to make sure they're not sending an OSHA violation, things like that. So anyway, just wanted to do a quick podcast today. Because it was a big deal in Sioux City last week. OSHA was in town. Dun, dun, dun. But kudos to my clients for being on level and surviving that with no citations. That's a big victory, man. When OSHA could come on site, check you out, and not get you on nothing, that's a huge victory. OSHA-wise. Doesn't mean you're safe, you know. Just means you're compliant with OSHA. I say this all the time. Being compliant with OSHA is just the beginning of safety. OSHA's baseline, low-level safety. You know, best practice is where everybody needs to be at. But no, I am proud of my clients that they survived with no citations. All right, everybody. Well, I hope you got something out of today. I hope if OSHA comes to your site that you're just prepared, cool, calm, and collected, and you just handle that like a boss and get no or very minimal citations. And it's not a freak out moment for you because you just got your ducks in a row and you know how to run the inspection. It's not just about having your ducks in the row. It's also about knowing how to run the inspection, what they're allowed to do, keeping them in their lane, you know, the process and procedure. But I hope if it ever happens to you, you're up on all that. That the inspection goes smooth, your ducks are in a row, and you know, you come out of that with no citations. These citations keep going up every year based on the consumer price index. Didn't used to be that way, but the past 10 years or so, they've been bumping these up every single year. I got to memorize a new number every year. So now it's, I got to say it 1,000 times to get it down because, you know, it's still fresh for me. $15,625 for any other than serious or serious violations. And add a zero to that for willful or repeated. So, all right, guys. Well, until next time, stay safe. We'll be right back.